Not of One Blood by Charles Weissman. This is a TearingDownIdols.com audiobook. This audiobook is free of copyright. Reproduction and redistribution are encouraged. For more reading and listening material on a variety of subjects, please visit TearingDownIdols.com. Primitive Races. The concept of primitive races presents some real difficulties that Christian writers and leaders have to face in their quest for equality. The difficulties lie in two areas. One is the existing primitive races, and second is the various extinct species of primitive men. The problem that most Christians have with this matter is not with the facts and data that have been revealed, but with the difficulty of fitting those facts and data into their religious doctrines. Any student of anthropology, history, or archaeology knows that there used to exist some beings so primitive that they have been called ape men. This is a term that causes havoc with the doctrines and theology of those who apply a literal interpretation to the Bible. Most people would not tend to regard these ape men as being made in the image of God, or having souls, or the reason Christ came and died on the cross. This creates a real dilemma for some overly religious Christians. Thus, facts of life and nature have to be denied or altered so their theology can stand. When it comes to the more ancient and primitive types, such as Australopithecus or Pithecanthropus, Java, and Peking Man, they are either ignored, or it is claimed that artifacts found are just remnants of an extinct ape. Since the existence of such ape men does not fit into man's view of God's creation, the tendency is to reject them. But as God said, "Your ways are not my ways." Isaiah 55, verse 8. The existence of the primitive Neanderthal species, however, is beyond any doubt. Skeletal remains have been found throughout Europe, the Near East, and Central Asia. We thus see desperate attempts to make them a normal, modern type of man, one that is fully human. There is no longer any doubt that Neanderthal man was truly human. Homo sapiens, no more different from modern men than the various tribes of modern men are from each other. His brain capacity was certainly human. Footnote: Henry M. Morris, Scientific Creationism, Master Books, page 175. End footnote. Just before this statement, the author was quoting a source about Homo erectus having a smaller brain than modern man. So he then states that there is no necessary correlation of brain size with intelligence. But when it is stated that Neanderthal had a brain as large or larger than modern man, then brain size is significant. Just some more of the inconsistency and hypocrisy of creationists. The brain of Neanderthals was very different from modern man. The cavity of the skull was large, but casts of the brain case indicate that the frontal lobes were small and the convolutions of the brain surface somewhat primitive in arrangement. Footnote: John R. Baker, Race, Oxford University Press, page 10. End footnote. These are the factors that affect intelligence. It thus is believed that Neanderthals were quite stupid compared to ourselves. As to its other features, they are all quite primitive and somewhat ape-like. Anatomically, Neanderthals were somewhat shorter but much more robust than contemporary Homo sapiens. Distinctive cranial features of Neanderthals included prominent brow ridges, low sloping foreheads, a chinless and heavy forward-jutting jaw, and extremely large front teeth. When placed in an evolutionary perspective, Neanderthal anatomy gives the impression of a large and somewhat primitive hominid, as though the evolutionary trajectory of Homo sapiens had somehow reversed itself. Footnote, Collier's Encyclopedia, Volume 12, page 134, 1984. End footnote. If a Neanderthal were alive today, he would be a real oddity with his short stature, 5'3" for a male, massively built body, huge eyebrow ridges, and a very sloping forehead. They were clearly not descended from Adam, and the sources that Morris cites prove this. Communication with inscribed symbols may go back as far as 135,000 years in man's history, antedating the 50,000-year-old Neanderthal man. Footnote, Morris, Scientific Creationism, page 176, citing Use of Symbols Antedates Neanderthal Man, Science Digest, March 1973, page 22. End footnote. Since Neanderthals existed 50,000 years or more before Adam, they are pre-Adamic. They thus could not be of one blood genetically with Adam's descendants. The message and plan of salvation was not intended to include them. Jesus Christ did not bear their sins, for they are not of Adam, and besides, they committed no sins. Now, what are the humanist and egalitarian Christians going to do about that? About all they can do is be hypocritical and distort the matter with inconsistent babble and emotional rhetoric. The primitive races that are living today pose other difficulties for the egalitarians, since more data is available. Here we have to deal with the fact that existing races are so primitive that up to modern times have never developed any civilization and have lived under animal-like conditions. One such people are the Australian Aborigines. The following statement is offered as an explanation for their low, primitive state. The Australian Aborigines have a technology and cultural knowledge which, in relation to their lifestyle and need to survive in the dry outback, is most appropriate. This includes aerodynamic principles used in making boomerangs, some of which are designed to return to the thrower, while others are not. Footnote. One Blood, page 116. End footnote. I suppose one could also say that chimpanzees have a technology and cultural knowledge which, in relation to their lifestyle and need to survive in the jungle, is appropriate for them. They use sticks as tools for poking and prying, rocks to crush or break open things, and can stack up objects to gain height for reaching things. Why were the Europeans able to make so much more out of the Australian environment than the Aborigines? There is a difference in the structure of their brain, thus a difference in culture and civilization. Footnote. For a scientific analysis of the differences between the brains of Aborigines and Europeans, see John R. Baker, Race, pages 292 through 295. End footnote. Their large brow ridges and thick brain case are primitive characteristics which are similar to Pithecanthropus and some larger apes. One of the requirements for higher civilizations is the ability to make something out of the environment instead of being limited and controlled by it. A primitive people are controlled and limited by their environment, as are animals in the wild. The Australian Aborigines are such a people. The technology of the boomerang that they had was essentially a throwing stick that was used to drive birds out of the rice fields or to kill animals. They were not the aerodynamic designs that returned to the thrower. It is probable that the boomerang was invented in India and the ancient Orient, and also developed independently in ancient Europe and Babylon. Footnote, J. E. J. Lennox. Throwing Wood and Boomerang, Vienna, 1949. End footnote. There is no real explanation that Christian writers and creationists can offer for the primitive state of some races. One general theory, they state, is that of degeneration. It is said that all of mankind was once at the same level of knowledge and industry. But after God confounded the language of men at Babel, some groups migrated away and did not take all the knowledge with them, or over time forgot what they once knew. In regards to the Tasmanians, they say this: "Sometimes we see evidence of degeneration that is hard to explain but is real nonetheless. For instance, when Europeans arrived in Tasmania, the Aborigines there had the simplest technology known. They caught no fish and did not usually make and wear clothes. Yet recent archaeological discoveries lead us to infer that some generations earlier, they had more knowledge and equipment." What was this knowledge and equipment that these primitive Tasmanians had at one time? Was it a plow to till the soil? A gearbox? The knowledge to build an aqueduct or dam? A knowledge of metallurgy? No, it is claimed that in the distant past, the Tasmanians had, quote, "equipment to sew skins into more complex clothes than the skins they just slung over their shoulders," end quote. It is also claimed they could catch fish in the past. Now, these skills are hardly of the caliber that would make a people civilized. Many animals know how to catch fish or how to weave straw, grass, and twigs together. But the fact that these Tasmanians could actually lose such simple and useful skills as sewing and catching fish only shows what type of simpletons they must be. One of the attributes of advanced civilization is not only to learn, invent, and discover, but to retain knowledge and to build upon it and devise improvements. We have to ask, if Europeans never visited Tasmania, how long would it have taken Tasmanians to build large ships and visit Europe? The best answer would be, never. They are not as advanced mentally as Europeans, a fact which these Christian writers have inadvertently proven. The belief of degeneration, whereby some races have undergone a cultural and industrial decline, making them primitive, is only speculation. We need not consider it, since the evidence of history and archaeology proves that stagnation was the problem, not degeneration. In other words, they never had originated and built a high state of culture, technology, or civilization. They have always been primitive and culturally depressed. The Negro in Africa has lived in barbarism for 30,000 years, although in a land rich in natural resources. They still do. The authors of the book, One Blood, devoted much space to the status of the pygmy race. They had an entire chapter on the pygmy named Otabenga, who was put on display in the Bronx Zoo in the early 1900s. The pygmy was in a cage next to an orangutan, though was able to leave it and interact with the crowd. Many scientists and writers made comparisons between the ape and the pygmy. The book goes into much detail how this pygmy was mistreated and made fun of while on display. They tell the tragic story of the difficulty the pygmy had with his benefactors when released from the zoo, and how he eventually killed himself. The authors try to show how all this was a case of racism, and since it was, we should regard pygmies as our blood brothers, so this sort of mistreatment and racism never occurs again. We will acknowledge that there was mistreatment of this pygmy, but mistreatment does not make an argument for equality. If so, then all animals that have been mistreated should be regarded as our equal to avoid such mistreatment. This is just another emotional appeal for equality, given in lieu of facts proving equality, since such facts are lacking. The authors of the One Blood book quote a number of science and news sources from that time, early 1900s, which explained the nature of the pygmy. They quote a Scientific American article, July 23, 1904, pages 107 through 108, which wrote about the pygmies based upon an African expedition. "The personal appearance, characteristics, and traits of the Congo pygmies They are small, ape-like, elfish creatures, furtive and mischievous, who live in the dense, tangled forests in absolute savagery. And while they exhibit many ape-like features in their bodies, they possess a certain alertness, which appears to make them more intelligent than other Negroes. The existence of the Pygmies is of the rudest. They do not practice agriculture and keep no domestic animals. They live by means of hunting and snaring, eking this out by means of thieving from the big Negroes. They quote from another article in the Scientific American article titled Pygmies of the Congo, August 5, 1905, which stated, "They, the Pygmies, are often dirty yellowish-brown in color and covered with a fine down. Their faces are fairly hairy, with great prognathism and retreating chins, while in general they are unintelligent and timid, having little tribal cohesion and usually living upon the fringes of higher tribes." They also quote from one of the most extensive studies of the Pygmies, a book on anthropology titled The Land of the Pygmies by Guy Burroughs, New York, Thomas Y. Crowell and Company, 1905, which stated, "The low state of their mental development is shown by the following facts. They have no regard for time, nor have they any records or traditions of the past. No religion is known among them, nor have they any fetish rites." Now, amazingly, there is no denial of any of these statements by the authors of One Blood. They do not claim that any statement was wrong or inaccurate. No one rightly could have a problem with what was said in these articles. Is it not true that pygmies have certain ape-like features in their bodies? Is it not true that they do not practice agriculture, keep no domestic animals, have no regard for time and no religion? Is it not true that they have prognathism and retreating chins? These are just facts which all researchers and anthropologists recognize from earlier times to the present. Apparently, all of these uncomplimentary facts were intended to stir up people's emotions, so they would believe that the facts constitute racism. And if they constitute racism, they can't be true. Thus, facts of nature are pushed out of the way. The author's only refutation of these statements is an attempt to cite some apparently positive attributes of the Pygmies. The Pygmies were in fact a talented group, experts at mimicry, physically agile, quick, nimble, and superior hunters. One could also say that leopards and tigers are talented since they are physically agile, quick, nimble, and superior hunters. Mimicry is an attribute that is associated with low intelligence. A child, a chimpanzee, or a parrot are known to engage in mimicry because they do not have intelligence to initiate rational thought or deductive reasoning. Mimicry is just copying the acts or ways of one who is more intelligent. The authors also make the following statement in defense of the pygmy. "Modern study has shown the pygmies in a far more accurate light and demonstrates how absurd the 1900s evolutionary worldview really was." Footnote, One Blood, page 137 through 138. End footnote. In support of this statement, there is only a footnote reference for the book The Forest People by C. Turnbull. Yet that book actually refers to pygmies as a, quote, primitive people, end quote, right on the cover. The book does not show pygmies as having any domesticated animals, any religious system, a cohesive civil structure, or any agriculture. Turnbull's book details the daily life of the pygmy within their nomadic camps, living in flimsy huts which need to be repaired every day with new leaves, page 132. They wear a loincloth made of tree bark, page 17, and regard the forest as their father and mother, page 92. The author states that the pygmies have an apparent lack of organization, page 124, and no form of leadership, no councils, and no mechanism for maintaining law and order, page 19. He also points out that they have few possessions, page 120, and use the most simple tools. He says that none of these pygmies knows how to make a fire, page 58. They thus have to carry a hot ember from their last fire as they move about. No allusions are made in Turnbull's book to the pygmy having equality with Europeans, or even with the Negroes that live around them. In fact, according to this book, pygmies view Europeans and Negroes as being quite different from themselves. As the book states, "The pygmy thinks nothing of stealing from Negroes. They are, after all, only animals, as seen by the pygmy eyes." Footnote: Colin M. Turnbull, The Forest People, New York, Simon & Schuster, 1968, page 120. The author also states that the Negroes, quote, "regard the pygmies much as the pygmies regard them in turn," end quote, page 177. End footnote. Now, if a white man had this view of Negroes in Africa, the egalitarians would be screaming racism. But pygmies are not held to the same standards, maybe because they are not as intelligent, and thus less is expected of them. In an attempt to show that pygmies are intelligent and creative, the authors of One Blood state, "Otobenga was referred to by C.F. Jane as, quote, a bright little man, end quote, who taught her how to make a set of string figures. Construction of string figures is a lost folk art." Footnote, One Blood, page 138. End footnote. If string figures are the best thing that can be cited for pygmy technology, or why these people are bright, then that is all that is needed to show that they are not very bright. We hear of terms like German engineering, British design, Swiss technology, or Yankee ingenuity. But no one has ever heard of pygmy technology, or of a pygmy engineer, because there is no such thing. When will these disorganized pygmies establish a jural society based upon law and justice? When will these people, who don't even know how to make a fire, make a Viking spacecraft that lands on the planet Mars? One can tell that the authors of the book One Blood had to really look hard to come up with information to support their egalitarian thesis. They quote an excerpt from a work by Hallett, which they say is written in defense of pygmies, page 138. One statement from this excerpt states, "The Ituri forest pygmies are the most primitive living members of our species." You see, the truth always comes out, no matter how hard one tries to go against it. Yes, pygmies are the most primitive people, and apparently, the authors of One Blood can't find one authority who says otherwise. Creationists and human Christians are racist themselves in many ways, though they don't realize it. None of them have ever pictured Adam and Eve as being pygmies or Australian Aborigines. Adam and Eve were God's premier creation, and thus, even creationists picture them as attractive Caucasians. This is why creationists can't really explain the primitive form and civilized state of some races. Primitive races are primitive for the same reason that all life forms are what they are: their genetic makeup.